The designated hour of 9:45 having arrived, I will call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. The first thing I'd like to, and let the record reflect that we do have a quorum, the first thing I would like to do is just mention that we have been assigned pages now for the committee. Their names are Steve and Emily. Would you like to stand up so everyone on the committee knows who you are? Thank you. We look forward to working with you during the rest of this session, so appreciate you being here. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the January 24th meeting. There is one error I caught. There's on the back of it, after the sentence that reads the oral amendment was incorporated, there's a sentence describing the A2 amendment. I think that whole paragraph, it's two sentences, should be deleted. There was the only amendment that was adopted was an oral amendment, not an A2 amendment. So any other questions or comments about the minutes? I'll move approval of the minutes all as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. So the first bill on the agenda for today is House File 140. Representative Moran is in the audience. Would you like to come forward? And while you're doing that, I will move that House File 140 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative Moran, if you'd like to discuss your bill, that'd be great.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, so I have two testifiers here with me today. We have Lillian Anderson, who's a braider, an entrepreneur, and also a successful plaintiff in a 2005 lawsuit against the Minnesota Board of Cosmetology, who will testify, along with Megan Forbes of the Institute for Justice, who will answer questions. So what this bill does, it repeals the Minnesota 30-hour specialty license for hair braiders. This legislation was enacted in 2007. Last year, this bill was House File 3664. It passed this committee and the State Government Finance Committee by a voice vote and was included in the Omnibus State Government Finance Bill, and then further consolidated into the Omnibus Supplemental Budget Bill, which was vetoed. House File 140 is a technical bill. It codifies in state law the consent judgment in Lillian Anderson case and that the Institute for Justice litigated successfully. Hennepin County Judge Isabel Gomez issued a judgment that enjoined the board from enforcing any licensing requirements from braiders. Lawyers for the Cosmetology Board interpret the injunction as stopping the board from enforcing licensing requirements on braiders. For that reason, the Cosmetology Board does not oppose this bill, and the board remains neutral on the bill, as far as we know. And so what I would like to do is now just pass this on to my testifier.
Sure. If you could, welcome to the committee. If you could just please state your name for the record, that'd be great.
My name is Lillian Anderson. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify in favor of the House, the HF 140 bill. I am an entrepreneur, a braider, and I was the plaintiff in the lawsuit Anderson versus Minnesota Cosmetology Board. I support this bill for two reasons. Braiding is a natural and safe thing. Every braider should have the freedom to live the American dream and the right to earn an honest living. I ask that you support this bill, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. I appreciate your testimony. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Megan Forbes, and I'm an attorney at the Institute for Justice. My law firm litigated the case involving Lillian and the Cosmetology Board in 2005. We've been active in advocating for greater freedom across the country, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you or the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Forbes. Appreciate you being here. I do have a few people. Are there any questions for the for these testifiers from members? I do have a few others on the list who would like to speak. I have Gina Fast from the Board of Cosmetology. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Freiberg and members of the committee and the opportunity to be here today. My name is Gina Fast, Executive Director for the Board of Cosmetology. I'm here just to testify on the board's responsibility or lack thereof on the current hair braiding laws, as I think there is confusion on this topic and what we do. I would like to note that the board did vote during last legislative session to, as they stated in their testimony, to remain neutral on the bill as it sat last year. The bill looks pretty identical this year, but we will meet on Monday. The lawsuit itself that they've described predates my time at the board. So the board has the responsibility to approve curriculums for infection control related to hair braiding that shall not exceed 30 hours, and the course can only be related to topics of health, safety, infection control, and state laws and rules. The course can be less than 30 hours. The board has the responsibility to issue registration to hair braiders who have taken this course only if they want to register. There's no mandate that they register, and we have around 150 braiders who are. We do not have the authority to license, register, or permit the locations where braiding occurs. The Board of Cosmetology has over 5,500 salon business licenses, and hair braiding is not included in these. Again, we only have the authority to permit people, not the businesses. As we do not have the authority to license, register, or permit the businesses, businesses where hair braiding happens, it does not get inspected. Currently, we have 9 staff in our inspection team that inspect salons about once every 15 to 18 months and inspect those more often that pose the greatest risk. On occasion, practitioners will have to re-educate to rise to the minimum standard of competency, including infection control. I'm often asked if there is a risk to hair braiding. I don't have statistics related to braiding and can't say for certain, as we don't investigate complaints, nor does the board have jurisdiction if we did receive a complaint. What I can say is that a majority of the executed complaints under the Board of Cosmetology jurisdiction is from inspections the board conducts. So to me, there's a big gap from issuing voluntary permits to the absence of inspecting. So we at the board don't truly know what's going on. This leads me to the logical conclusion that we may not be seeing the full picture of infection control. I think there's a lack of clarity of the board's roles in the eyes of nearly everyone but the board and staff itself. We don't regulate braiders as we do other licensees, and there's a perceived impression that the Board of Cosmetology does, as I've had this conversation with braiders, the public, legislators, staff at the legislature, hundreds of times over what the board's responsibility is related to braiding. Maybe regulation is not needed, and this is not for me to decide. But as someone who takes my role and responsibility seriously, I come here to let you know that we don't offer the same level of regulatory services to the public for a person that visits braiding salons as we do for cosmetology, nail, esthetician, and eyelash extensions. I think the public deserves clarity on the state of Minnesota's role related to this topic. I know there is a sense we do regulate hair braiding, but we don't. Clarity of the law is needed. I think that you move to treat braiding either the same as cosmetology, nail technology, or barbering, or you do what is being asked by this legislation, which is deregulation, and tell the citizens of Minnesota that it's not regulated. I've often used the example of the public being misinformed or misguided by the word medical esthetician. It's often used on websites' business cards. There is no such thing as a medical esthetician in Minnesota. The board adopted rules to prohibit the use of advertising because those words, as there is no such license, it's misleading to the public that the word means something, better trained, more educated, possibly even safer. The braiding permit housed under the Board of Cosmetology creates a false sense of oversight that does not exist. So I thank you for your time, and I stand for any questions. And I believe, again, the board was neutral on it last year, but I think it needs to be stated very clearly. The Board of Cosmetology does not regulate braiding as it does all the other fields under its jurisdiction.
Thank you, Ms. Fast. I appreciate that testimony. Okay. Are there any questions? Okay. I have Gwendolyn Barber on the list. Okay, I don't see her. I also have Lola Oloye on the list. Okay, I don't see her. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on this bill? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Members, is there discussion? Okay, I guess Representative Moran, I will leave it to you for closing comments.
So, Mr. Chair and members, braiding is a natural process that's been handed down for generations in the black community. It is what my mother did, my grandmother did, and all ancestors before us. It's just naturally what we do and how we do it. It doesn't entail any type of changing the texture of your hair, any straightener. None of that is a part of what we do when we braid hair. It is really just what we do as a culture and as a people. And so I understand the cosmetology board was neutral, and they may not know their role in how oversight, what that needs to look like, but I just state before you guys, it's an over-regulated process that does not need regulations. And I'm just hoping I can get the support of this committee so this can move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 140 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Moran. Your bill is on its way. Representative Nelson, we have House File 123 on the agenda.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members.
Thank you. Would you like to move your bill since you're on the committee?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move House File 123. I believe it goes to Ways and Means.
Correct. Yes. So Representative Nelson moves House File 123 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And he is getting some additional information.
Thank you, members. Pardon me for that. Anyway, House File 123, what it does is it eliminates a duplicative office that we created in the legislature, the Legislative Budget Office. Now, I know it's only been a couple of years ago that we passed this legislation, and it hasn't fully taken effect yet, but members, this is a duplication of an office and functions that are currently being done by the MNB, and it's a wasteful expansion of government. Currently, the fiscal note processes are done by the Minnesota Management Budget Office, and even if we allow the LBO to go forward, it would still have to do all the work and give that information to the Legislative Budget Office. So in fact, they're doing it twice. Other states have different ways of doing this. They have legislative budget offices that creates the fiscal note process and other things. But in Minnesota, we get those from the MMB. And again, if we create this legislative budget office, we're still going to have to do, or if we allow this office to go forward, we're still going to have to, the MMB is still going to have to provide that information. So there would not be any corresponding reduction in staff at the state level. This is going to be an additional cost to our budget, $1.6 million in the biennium. And members, I personally don't think we need that, and that's not a fiscally responsible way for us to spend our taxpayer dollars. In 2012, and that's when I went back to my thing to get, the legislative auditor, Mr. Nobles, did a review of the legislative budget office, the fiscal note process that MMB does. And while there were some recommendations they had to improvement, and in your package you should see a list of those improvements that they asked for. I've been told that the Minnesota Management and Budget has done all those things that they requested, that they recommended that they do to improve the system. So again, we don't need a duplicated office to do this. Also, if you get the report, and this is also in your packet, and it's bracketed what they say, that there was a bunch of recommendations and there were some options, they said options that we could do to do this differently than we were doing it at the time. And one of the ones was creating a legislative budget office. But according to the legislative auditor, my tongue's getting in the way today, it says, in our view, assigning the oversight of the fiscal notes to a legislative agency would be feasible, but it is unclear the outcome would be superior to the existing MMB oversight. The feasibility of having fiscal notes prepared is demonstrated in other states. It is, however, unclear whether the notes issued by the legislative staff would be more accurate of those completed by the executive branch. And even if they were seen as more credible, the notes would still rely on data from the executive agencies. So again, we're duplicating what's already being done, increasing the government size of our government. And I think it's a waste of our staff. The other thing with the Legislative Budget Office, currently MMB moves people over to take care of the fiscal notes while we're in session. So 5 months of the year, they have additional staff working on that. 3 months, 2 to 3 months of the year, and the second year of the biennium, they have those people move over. But then they move back into other tasks while we're not in session, while we're not requiring fiscal notes. That wouldn't be the same with the Legislative Budget Office. So again, they'd be working for 5 months of the year, and then the rest of the year they wouldn't have a duty to do. So that's the gist of my bill, and Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I do have three members on the list with questions. I'm guessing these are questions for the author, for you as the author. Just so I could get a handle on what's happening, I don't have anybody who specifically asked to speak on this bill. Just so I have a sense of the time, could I just see a show of hands if there is anybody in the audience who would like to testify on this bill before I turn to these member questions? Okay. Was that a wave or was? Okay, shaking her head. Okay, I think she was waving at somebody. All right. Okay, so I don't see anybody, so I'll just turn to member questions at this point. Representative Quam. You were first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Adam's fine.
In our packet, and I think that the author referenced this, but be maybe useful to have the committee have a precedent of where we actually reference where pages copied out of some report are from, or at least who it was that, you know, submitted them, just for future reference, because when I looked through our materials before we started the committee, I didn't see that. Two things that I would like to bring up for members. The first is to the chair. In the past, a chair of a related committee had requested a fiscal note. Many weeks went by. The chair met with the head of an agency and was told, well, we still don't have that. And 2 hours later, there was a press conference where some of the requested information was spoken at the press conference. So that wouldn't happen if we had a legislative budget office. The next thing is that actually, it was in this committee several years ago. There was bill proposing something that had to do with elections, and a fiscal note came out, and I think it was in the order $10-20 million because of equipment. And then when the electronic poll books came out using basically the same capability equipment, it was much lower. Now, I know technology gets cheaper, but being familiar with that, it was greater than the order of magnitude less. One was, of course, the higher one was what the administration was opposed to. The lower one was what the administration liked. And magically, the numbers were, greater than an order of magnitude different. And frankly, those are the reasons why, and it doesn't matter, this is nonpartisan. We should have the great people that do our nonpartisan work and research for the House and Senate involved in subtracting the partisanship that can happen in an administration or part of an administration from the data we have in order to do the work of the people. And if we're using these fiscal notes to make determinations of what bill to do, how to move money around, which is our duty as servants of the people, then we should make sure that we have the best possible nonpartisan information. And this is not a statement on any administration, because I have heard it both ways across the decades. And that is why I understand and commend your push for fiscal conservatism on this topic. I think sometimes to get the best support and work and effort for the people, we should spend a little bit more to make sure we can do the best job. Thank you. And that, yes, that was a statement, not a question.
Well, Mr. Chair and members,
Representative,
as I stated, the two things that I passed out were out of the for the legislative auditor's report 2012, and it were his recommendations, and I stated that in my comments. And Mr. Chair, members, like I said, it's to me that we're duplicating something we already do. I've heard those complaints about people saying that, well, the fiscal note's not right. But as the legislative auditor pointed out, he found them to be mostly accurate in his study of it. So, and I believe that's why he was done. We directed him 1 year to do that, this study. So that's what I'm basing this bill on, and trying to save money for the state.
Thank you. And I do think Representative Quam has a good suggestion. You know, I know on the floor, when documents are handed out, usually the person who handed them out signs their name on it. I don't recall seeing that in committee specifically, but that's certainly not a reason we shouldn't do it here, so that's something we'll certainly look into doing in the future. I think that's a good suggestion, Representative Quam. Representative Nash, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nelson, it's refreshing to hear that you're adverse to the growth of government. That makes me happy on the inside. But, I want to use an example from this committee, and I've served on this committee ever since I got to the legislature. Many of you are new to this committee. Representative Lilly, you were here last year when I had a bill that was going to make some technology improvements. Imagine me talking about technology. And the bill was to save, I think, $13 million, but the fiscal note, the first iteration, came out saying it was going to cost $26 million. And everybody in committee got a good chuckle that here's Nash trying to save the state money, but in actuality he's increasing the cost. We put in a request for a review of that fiscal note. It came back actually showing that I was going to save money. And I think Representative Quam's point, and the point that I'll make, is this, that what we're seeing on many fiscal notes is administration perhaps putting their thumb on the scale to disprove a bill from the opposition I certainly can't prove that, but that's the tenor that I got. And Representative Lilly, you were in that committee room when we talked about that, and you said, look, this doesn't seem to match up. We should get a good answer for this. When that came back, it was clear that the bill that I had was going to save us money. The point is this, that an organization like the OLA, I view Mr. Nobles as perhaps the best umpire that we're ever going to get in this facility, has a consistent strike zone, calls balls and strikes fairly every single time. And I believe that for us to move away from this, Representative Nelson, is irresponsible, because we want accurate information. We've all heard that you want accurate information. We want accurate information. The legislative auditor is about as nonpartisan as it's going to get. And I think that the OLA goes to painstaking efforts to make sure that that happens. How can we, rather flippantly, move away from that when I'm sure that you've had frustration with fiscal notes that you've gotten, and that for those of you who are new on the committee, when you get a fiscal note on your bill, you'll wonder, well, is this accurate? What did they use? What are the metrics that they use? And was this completely nonpartisan? I find it a little disturbing, particularly as somebody who's sat on this committee now. This is my fifth year on this committee. Fiscal notes are a big deal in this committee. We should get it right. We should go to the effort to make sure that we've uncovered everything possible. And I have high level of confidence in the OLA that this would be something that would actually come out that would be an accurate representation, so that both sides of an issue can understand the fiscal implications. So, again, not much of a question, but a statement. I think this is just reckless, and I think that what is going to happen as a result of this is we're going to see whomever the party may be holding the gubernatorial mansion. You could see a lack of objectivity if you didn't like a bill that was coming from the minority party or from the party that is not your party if they hold the legislature. So this is, again, another good example of why we need somebody who is that just down the middle, balls and strikes, umpire, and I think we get that in the OLA and the Legislative Budget Office.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash and members, as I said in my opening statements and maybe fumble a little bit, according to Jim Nobles in the Legislative Auditor's Office, their recommendations is to not create a separate entity to do this, that it would be duplicating work that it is. And as the handout I handed out on page, it says 85, page 85 on the top, which is 85 of this report. He says the resulting report did not recommend that a legislative staff prepare fiscal notes, that it be stay in the legislative or stay in the Office of Minnesota Management and Budget, because again, those state agencies are the ones that are going to have to provide this information. And if they provide information to tip the thumb in their favor, as Representative Nash says, they're still going to be able to do that. And that's the information that the Legislative Budget Office is going to have to rely on to make their recommendations to us, and not any different than what is currently happening with NMB.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I do have a few questions. So,
Mr. Fine, too.
First of all, relative to the comment that was just made to Representative Nelson, would be the question is, who actually in that on page 85, who actually did that assessment? In other words, it says the merits of transferring responsibility. Most people interviewed do not think that the office would be of optimal. Who did the assessment?
Representative Nelson?
Representative Vogel, this honorable fiscal note review that was done by the legislative auditor, Jim Noble's office.
Yeah, and I do notice, Representative Vogel, it says in the top of the first sentence there, the 2010 legislature directed MMB to assess, among other things, so I assume that means MMB did the assessment then.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my next question is, yes, the auditor did put it in his report, but the legislature had directed MMB to do the assessment. My sense is that if MMB thought they were doing a good job, and it says they interviewed, most people that were interviewed did not think the new office would be an optimal solution, there might have been a little bit of bias in there, and to Representative Nelson, my question is, could that be the case here, that the OLA is reporting what the assessment said but did not do the assessment themselves?
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Vogel. As I said, if you go back in your packet, there was also the list of recommendations that the legislative auditor put forward, and creating a legislative budget office was not one of his recommendations that he made. The recommendations are in there, list of recommendations, and there are a page and a half of them, and creating a legislative budget office was not one of his recommendations to make the process better.
Thank you. Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I think the point is still that MMB did the assessment on themselves, saying whether or not it was a good idea to transfer. And, you know, even down in the second paragraph, then, it says the notes would still rely largely on data from the executive agencies, and we heard some concern that legislative staff might feel some pressure to have their estimates conform to the legislators' expectations. So, you know, they're talking about the objectivity, and I guess that goes to my second question here is, if indeed we eliminate this office, which is already in statute and functioning, then where does the independence, the objectivity, come in the process?
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, and Mr. Representative Vogel, again, like I said, we have good staff. I think we have good staff, and we have dedicated employees in both in the executive branch and our staff that we have here. And I rely on their trustworthiness and their honor to make sure that we get notes properly. And I believe what I've done, like I said, I've heard those complaints in the past from both sides, depending on who's governor, complaining about how they don't trust the fiscal notes, but in the most part, those fiscal notes come forward, and while there may be mistakes and there may be misinterpretations, I believe they've done a good job of giving us the information we need to make the recommendations we have to pass our budgets.
Representative Vogel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, think that they do a relatively good job. Unfortunately, in the business world that I'm familiar with, you always want objectivity, and we would never bring somebody into audit that's actually doing the function. And that's where I'm asking about the objectivity and the independence here is that the information, first of all, we write the check. We are responsible for writing the check. We are the appropriators. So the information that we get needs to be accurate because we're responsible to the public for writing the check. Then when it comes to estimating how much that bill is going to cost, the process turns over to the agencies, which are in the executive branch, which submit their estimates of how much it's going to cost. Appropriate. Then MMB assembles those estimates into what's called a fiscal note. That's appropriate. The question is, so where is the objectivity relative to the people that are writing the check? And that's where I think we have a problem here is, who controls the process on what we're appropriating from? And it's exclusively controlled by MMB with possibly some input, but that fiscal note is written there. The analogy I would use is, let's say somebody is buying a new home, and the seller is asking $50,000 more than the purchaser thinks it's worth. So they come to an agreement and they say, you know what, we don't know what it's worth, we'll get an independent appraiser in here. So the seller picks the appraiser, and the appraisal comes back and says, yep, it's worth $50,000 more. Do you think I, as the purchaser, I, as the user of that information, is going to have complete confidence in that appraisal? I need to retain my own counsel. I need to retain my own appraisal of what's going on, and that's what's going on here, is we have an office now that's doing the best job they can, and I'm not disputing that their intent is good. But sometimes our view of things gets a little bit jaundiced relative to the entity that we're part of. We are relying exclusively on the executive branch to gain the information from the agencies, which are under the control of the executive branch, and then to write the report that we're going to use. And that's my question, Representative Nelson, is where is the objectivity coming in relative to the body that is writing the check?
Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, I think that we have that now with the current system that's going on. We said we get fiscal notes, we're the ones that write the check, we pass the bill, we say we're going to give you this much money to do it. They can't come back and spend more money than what we already give them. We're the ones that oversee those. We have our fiscal staff here that sit on the fiscal committees, and they look at these things and try and figure those or guess those things out. And if they see something egregious about what it is, as Representative Mash said earlier about a bill from the last session, they have a way to go back and ask them to review this and verify what those numbers are and do that. And that's part of our process and what we do as legislators. So I think we already have that with the current system. Again, I think this is a duplicative form of government or part of government we're creating. And as the chair of the Government Operations Committee, I'm hearing that right now they have the authority to hire 6.5 full-time equivalents. They're saying that they can't do it with that. That's what I'm being told, and that they need to expand their office, so they're going to be coming forward with the change item to make it even bigger. The reason I'm bringing this bill forward today and now is that currently the MMB still does those fiscal notes. They don't take over till this fall. And so if we could, and they're going to have to create space for these people to be, so they're going to have, there's going to be a cost there for renting of office space on top of the additional staff they're going to need. Again, it's just ballooning of the size of government, and Representative Nash and Representative Vogel, I've always been one that's been conservative about how we spend our money in government, because it's our state taxpayer dollars that we're spending. And that's why I'm bringing this bill forward.
Representative Nelson, you promoted yourself to chair of the Government Operations Committee.
I'm sorry, state government finance.
Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair. And, you know, to my point, I thought, okay, you know, let's go back and look at what the objectivity could add to us as a legislature. So I asked for the fiscal note on Minlars. Surprisingly, it says there was not a fiscal note for Minlars project when it was started in 2008. At the time, the governor, Plenty, requested a $12 million a year appropriation for the computer system replacement out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And I have a copy here of the governor's budget, and that's how Minlars was started. It was started with, we're going to take $12 million a year from the highway fund, and we're over 3 years, $36 million, and we're going to do this. I think we all know how that turned out. My point is that it was done exclusively through the executive branch. There wasn't as much scrutiny as there should have gone. There wasn't an ongoing scrutiny as to what is going on with this, which is my point with the Legislative Budget Office. That office is working for us as legislators. It's represented, it's bicameral and bipartisan, equally split between Republicans and Democrats, just like the OLA, just like the LCC. It is there to function to make us better. Would it have been maybe a good investment to have spent a little more time up front figuring out what this might cost, tracking whether it might work? Yes, it came with an estimate of $36 million. We're probably $100 million over that. If indeed we would have plowed in $1.5 million or $2 million even a year for proper fiscal analysis and tracking like the LBO could do, would that be a good deal? How many years would it take to recoup $100 million of a mistake if we had people that were looking at it just from our perspective, not from the governor's perspective, but from ours? That's not to say that the governor intentionally misstated this, that anybody made a mistake, but the problem is, with the system the way it is now, and that's the question of objectivity, where is the objectivity coming from? Who's protecting us, protecting the taxpayer dollars, because the checkbook is ours? So if we take this away, again, I ask about the objectivity. Where is that going to come from so that this kind of stuff doesn't happen?
Sounds like it might be rhetorical. Would you like...
Mr. Chair, thank you. Unless there is a response, I guess I may get the same answer that I've gotten before.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, as I stated earlier, the information that they're getting through, what it's going to cost, what, how much staff is going to involve is going to be still be coming from the executive branch. So hence the information is not going to be any different from if the Legislative Budget Office looks at it or the current MMB looks at it. And that's, like I said, that's, they're getting the same information from the same people, and that's, like I said, that's why we're duplicating, because we're not going to reduce anybody in the Hartford administration, because they still have to do the other jobs that they have to do.
Mr. Chair, just one more, if you...
Sure.
Okay, so as I look at this, and I think that the setting up the OLA was an excellent idea, because it gave us a view of what has happened, and we can go back, and I think everybody at this table, everybody in the audience would agree that those OLA reports are extremely valuable, because they're looking at independently what has happened. What I'm talking about here with the LBO is, let's look at it before it happens, while it's happening. By the time we get the report from the OLA, it's over. We can get a report right now on Minlars from OLA and say, yep, it didn't work out right. The problem is, it's over. If this would have been tracked and followed, first of all, how much is it really going to cost and what needs to be done? Secondly, as it's going on, it was tracked, we wouldn't have the problems we have now. Final question, we could save $7 million a year. I think that's about the budget of the OLA. Should that also then go to MMB, because it would probably be more efficient for those people in the off time to just audit themselves?
Question.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I guess I didn't quite catch all that question. It was kind of long and rambling, but like I said, it's the Legislative Budget Office is a duplication of what already we are doing. The information would come from the same place. As far as dragging Minlars into this, they were talking about Minlars my first term in 2003 about having to upgrade their computer system. We as a state did not spend enough money or allocate enough money, and we do a bad job of that, of allocating enough money to keep up with technology changes, and as a fact they had to take a 40-year-old system and totally revamp it to meet the current regulations from the federal government for Real ID and all these other things. And yes, they botched it. I'm not going to stand up and say Minlars was not botched. They botched it. But again, that was started under Governor Pawlenty. The people that started it, they subbed that out to an outside contractor that did not do their job, and Minute ended up having to take it back over. And we would not have been, if we had had an inside, a Legislative Budget Office or MMB, none of them could know ahead of time that the outside contractor that was hired would botch the system like they did. So I think we're comparing apples and oranges here. This is a way to save money for the state. These notes are already being provided to us and be provided in a fairly efficient manner from while we're in the legislature. Duplicating this someplace else with people that aren't going to have other duties to do is going to be, I think, wasteful, because they're going to be doing this while we're in session, and they don't have other jobs to really do while we're not in session.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is going to be kind of a compound question.
Great. I love
that. Huh? your favorite kind? the big question I've been asking myself about this as I try and understand this issue is that, as Chair Nelson points out, that these people will have jobs for 5 months of the year and no specified responsibilities for the other seven. So how does the director of the office attract a qualified staff when 7 months of the year there's no work for them to do? But, excuse me, listening to Representative Nash's comments, it kind of gave me an idea, is that, you know, given that it seems like everybody on both sides of the aisle respects the work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor, could this office somehow be, associated or married somehow with the OLA, such that the people working for the director could do our fiscal notes during the session and be available to supplement the OLA staff to do work that we've commissioned the other 7 months of the year?
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't speak for the legislative auditor, although I know Mr. Nobles has said in the past that he'd be willing to take on any work that we assign to him. It's a matter of finances and it's a matter of budget. If you're going to expand his office and give him additional responsibilities, he would need more money to do that. Like I said, in the past, when he's been asked that question, many times I've heard him say he'd be willing to take anything we assign him to do. It's just a matter of how much other stuff he can't do if we don't increase his budget when we assign additional duties to his office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I'm wondering, I didn't have a ton of time to look through this morning, but I hopped on. What's the Senate file number for this bill?
Maybe that's just on the floor. We're not supposed to ask about the lesser body, but so I'll permit it here, Representative Nelson.
The Senate file has been over. The Senate jackets have been sent over. I don't know if they've been introduced yet.
Okay.
But they've been sent over to the Senate, and there's a senator that said that he was going to put them in.
Okay.
Mr. Representative Zerwas.
All right, so that hasn't been introduced, or there's not a hearing scheduled yet?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zerwas, I don't pay attention to the lesser body as much as like I said, we do our work here, and we send it over to them, and they do their work there and send it over to us, and like I said, they're the lesser body, so I'm assuming that we can do our better job.
Representative Zerwas?
Well, you know, it makes it easier to pass a bill if it gets introduced in the Senate. Just a friendly word of advice. I think I heard you say in the intro, and I'm just wondering if I misheard you. Did you say that in the OLA report for the OLA's recommendation that MMB in the legislature implemented all of the recommendations in the OLA report?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, if you look on the sheet here that says list of recommendations that I passed out, you look down to the bottom there, it starts saying MMB. The ones that were directed to MMB, I've been told that they have implemented all of those. That's what I was told by MMB, that they've implemented all those recommendations that came from the legislative auditor's report.
Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, the four recommendations to the legislature for changes in legislation. Have you introduced a bill to address those recommendations?
Representative Nelson.
And Mr. Chair, no.
Okay. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, do you think those recommendations are less important?
Representative Nelson.
No.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Zerwas.
Representative Freiberg, kind of looking... Representative Nelson, looking through the language here and looking through the handouts that you have, I'm wondering if 31 other states have an independent legislative budget office, and in a bipartisan fashion, the state of Minnesota decided to go that direction, why do you want to undo that?
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, as I said earlier, that the current legislative budget office that's being created, again, it hasn't taken effect yet. It doesn't take effect till the end of this year, or later on this year, I guess it would be more appropriate to say that. They're not hired up. They're not staffed up. And so I'm looking at this on the cost of this that they're currently budgeted for, and I'm being told they're going to be asking for additional staff and additional money to do their job. We're in the budget year this year. This is going to be part of the budget. Now is the time before they get up and running and have are fully staffed, that if we're going to relook at this and look at the fact that this is a duplication of information we already get, this is a duplication of stuff that's already being done, that now is the time before that they get staff fully up and they get fully running, that this is the time to relook at this and, in my view, to eliminate it moving forward.
Representative Zerwas.
One last question, Mr. Chair. What other bills do you have introduced this session as administrative cost-cutting measures?
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Zurich, I haven't introduced any bills yet to that. I've been meeting as in my role as state government finance chair. Again, I used to chair this committee, so that's why sometimes I slip up. But state government finance chair is looking at what is done, what they can do, and what they're doing. And I've been telling all these administrative the heads that have come and spoken with me that they need to come forward with ways that they can save money in their departments, that there are things that we need to do in the legislature that relieve them of mandates that we put on them that cost money, that to bring those forward so that we can look at those and possibly look at those as a bill. They haven't come forward with me yet, but I know when we do go through the budget process, I'm going to have to look at their budgets and make those decisions, because even though we have the November forecast had this huge, some people thought, budget surplus there, when you really look down and dial down the numbers, that the $1.5 billion that the press and everyone likes to tout, it's only about $350 million. And when you look at the out year, the next year of the biennium, which we always budget into and with making sure that we're not putting burdens on the next budget year, we're actually in a structural deficit. So there's not a lot of money out there. And so I've been telling these department heads that if they're looking at ways to save money, that they need to bring that forward, because they're not going to get huge budget increases that I can see.
Representative Zerwas?
Well, thank you for that answer, and I appreciate that, and look forward to helping you in your efforts to find unnecessary expenditures and help the state agencies make the appropriate cuts. Mr. Chair, I guess from my point of view, the work that was done by the House and Senate last year and signed or a couple years back and signed into law by Governor Dayton to improve the transparency into this process and improve the accountability back to the branch of government that writes the check on these appropriations. I think that process seemed to be well thought out, and I think the office itself is something that would improve our process and certainly improve the legislature's ability to have insight into that process. I think anything that moves this bill forward to undo that transparency, undo that accountability, is a step in the wrong direction. Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on this vote, and I would ask my members to oppose this bill moving forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. A roll call has been requested and will be granted. Representative Mason, I think you are next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple of comments. I think there are arguments on both sides of this that are extremely valid, but I will be voting against this, and people can react to this. We have the Office of Legislative Auditor. We have independent financial staff already, and I'm basing my confidence that we have enough resources within the legislature already to kind of deal with the balance of power. And when you're referring back to other projects, I would suggest you be very, very careful. I mean, the restoration of the state capitol to me would be an excellent illustration for those of you who have the opportunity to look at the capitol a decade or so ago. That restoration should have happened probably 20 or 30 years ago, and obviously that didn't happen. So the fact that you just can't count on previous legislators always doing what needed to be done. And as I said, I think we have the resources we need that we don't need in this case to spend extra money.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Let's see. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. I'm a little concerned that we're using only the data from 2012 to make these assumptions and to talk about what the recommendations are. And I think in 7 years, we probably changed a little bit. And I certainly know that since I've been here, I'm in my fourth term, and I've been on government operations the whole time, it just seems like what was happening well then isn't necessarily happening well now. And this year our speaker has been talking about how she wants to make the legislature more effective, efficient, and transparent. And I feel like this is a good opportunity to do that, to have the staff that is nonpartisan take care of our fiscal notes, because, again, I've had fiscal notes that I'm totally blown away by what they're showing, and just it almost seems laughable. But what really kind of struck me is when I first came here, and I mean in the Government Operations Committee, one of the first bills that we saw was the repealing of the Sunset Commission. And that was signed into law by Governor Dayton, and it was modeled after a successful commission in Texas whose goal was to make the agencies more efficient by eliminating or combining offices, agencies. And in Texas, their Sunset Commission abolished 37 agencies, consolidated another 46, and saved nearly $980 million. But yet, before it even started, and it was never funded, we repealed it. And I look at this, and we haven't even started this, and here we are repealing it again as well. Our agencies have been in the news more than anything else because they aren't acting well. They aren't being fiscally smart. And one thing that I've learned in traveling on capital investment tours with Representative Vogel is that he knows numbers better than I would ever hope to know. So when he comes forward with a commission, with a proposal like this, I believe wholeheartedly in what the legislative office is about. And I think we do ourselves a great disservice by not taking the recommendations of somebody who knows finances so well. The gentleman who carried the Sunset Commission was Representative Banyan, who's the doctor at St. Cloud State in economics, and yet we thought he didn't know what he was doing. I'm just really saddened to see us do this, and I wish we had more updated information from OLA or wherever to find out if indeed the recommendations were done for sure. I mean, MMB can say they did them, but I don't know that I necessarily trust that. Or did they do them their way, or did they do it the way that it was specified in the report? So I guess I don't have a question. I just have a statement. It's just it just saddens me that when I came here, we sunsetted something that didn't even get an opportunity to start that could have saved us a ton of money. And here we are doing this again. And I do have a question about the path of the bill. My understanding is it'll go to Ways and Means, but is it just going to hang out there, or will it be recommended to another committee?
My assumption, Representative Tice, is that it would be referred within the Ways and Means to the State Government Finance Division. I don't know if you have additional thoughts or knowledge of that, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I would assume, and Representative Tice, I would assume that's where it's going to go with State Government Finance. And a comment, and responding to your comment about the Sunset Commission, when the Sunset Commission was created, we did it on the cheap, as opposed to Texas, which has 50 staff doing that. I was on the Sunset Commission. I heard from some of the people that were involved in that from Texas. They have a huge staff that goes in and actually goes in and audits and looks at the different departments and does, I think, a laudable job. We did it on the cheap. We didn't give the Sunset Commission any money. We told staff that are currently on that you'd have to staff this, so they didn't have the opportunity, the ability to go in and do those in-depth research into those committees. And so, therefore, it wasn't effective. And unless we wanted to really expand that Sunset Commission, it wasn't going to do what Texas does with theirs and a couple other states do with theirs. And then I think it was one other state that was lauded about, I think it was Florida, but I could be wrong there, but there was another state that they said did a really good job about that the people that created the Sunset Commission, well, before we even got ours up and running, they eliminated theirs to save money in their state. So, like I said, this is different apples and oranges. Again, we're the way we funded this, the amount of money they funded it to has not. They're saying they need more money to do the job properly. Otherwise, we're not going to get our fiscal notes. They're going to have to rely on, as the legislative auditor's report said, they are going to have to rely on the MMB for that information on what it costs.
and what they're going to have to do to do what we ask them to do in legislation. So again, they're going to be sending that information to LBO. The LBO is going to have to do it. That's a layer there that's in between that I don't think creates a layer of less transparency moving forward. And so I think this, like I said, this is the reason why I'm doing it before this gets up and running, and it's costing us a lot of money to run, do the same thing that's already being accomplished with the through MMB with the fiscal note process. That's why I brought the bill forward.
Representative Tice?
Just a quick comment. I understand that, but I also think at some point, as a business owner, that's what my experience is. Sometimes you got to spend money to make the money and get the money back. And I look at if we could have saved some money in some of our agencies with the Sunset Commission, it would have been nice if it would have been funded. So I'm looking at this as the same thing. This is probably a really good deal, something that can help us in the legislation we pass. But again, we're going to give up on it before we even give it a chance. Thank you.
Sounds like a comment. Representative Elkins, you have a quick
just
question?
I'm going to vote in favor of this bill because I want to see the conversation continue. But I'm very concerned that if we move forward with the formation of this office, that we have an answer to the question of what are these people going to do the other 7 months of the year, and how are we going to recruit a quality of staff for this office if they've only got 5 months of work to do.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Vogel?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just point of clarification, this is eliminating a commission. The commission was started in 2017 with a task force that met for a year to decide how best to do this. Then it was enacted in 2018 as a fully functioning commission, and it has been working as a fully functioning commission, and there are people already hired in this entity. The only thing that hasn't occurred yet, because it didn't make sense to try to have fiscal notes started in January, was to delay the start of the fiscal note implementation until September 1st of this year. But this is to eliminate a functioning commission that was put in place with a task force that studied it and now is going to bring more transparency and accuracy to the money that we're spending. So this isn't stopping something that hasn't started yet. This is stopping, this is putting to end a commission, just as Representative Tice talked about, that is meant to bring more transparency and better government. So don't think that you're just voting to slow down or eliminate something that's on its way. This is there, this is functioning, and it has been functioning in a bicameral, bipartisan manner since July 1st of last year.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. I don't have any other member questions. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I don't talk very much, so it's easy to look over. But so agencies are the ones who come up with the numbers, send it to MMB, and MMB, we hope, vets those numbers for us to understand what the fiscal notes have. But, I mean, if you know any with how offices work in the legislature and in the executive branch, you don't like to step on the toes of your colleagues. So there is an incentive for MMB to validate those numbers. And then even in the OLA report from 2012, they said, well, we believe most of these are correct. There's occasional errors, but they don't have explanations, and nothing's adequately explained. So they have an incentive to take what the agency says, and they don't explain it. The OLA says they don't explain it. And to me, that says, yes, we need to move that out of the executive branch and make sure that another branch of government without the incentive can objectively look at the numbers, which is the whole point of the committee office. And I view it like buying a house. When they're asking for the money and we're writing the check, we want to make sure we're getting the appraisal from somebody we hire as the buyer. The seller shouldn't be getting the appraisal because they have an incentive, just like MMB does, to create whatever number they desire. And I think the Legislative Budget Office is great to make sure that doesn't happen. And Representative Rosenthal and former Representative Rosenthal and Representative Vogel are literally the two smartest people I know when it comes to finances by a million miles. So, I mean, Rosenthal was a co-author on the bill that created this commission. I encourage Representative Elkins to talk with him if you have any questions about it. I'm sure you have a great relationship with him. But we need to, I mean, this is a very important office to keep open. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, response?
I didn't hear your question.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, now I think I don't have any other members on the list. Representative Nelson, would you care to make a closing remark?
Mr. Chair, I just what I've already said after the testimony we've given, I would renew my motion that House File 123 be sent to Ways and Means. Referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Nelson renews his motion that House File 123 be referred to Ways and Means. There has been a roll call requested. The clerk will take our first roll call of the year.
Okay. Representative Freiberg.
I'll be voting yes.
Representative Bonner.
I vote yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski. Representative Quam.
Nine.
Representative Sauk. Yes. Yes. Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
No.
There being 10 ayes and 8 nays, the motion is approved. The bill is continuing to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Representative Nelson. That is the last official action on the agenda for today. I did want to mention I had initially scheduled some of the elections bills pending re-referral from the Elections Subcommittee for Thursday. However, it occurred to me that since they're being heard in the Elections Subcommittee on Wednesday, I should probably, whenever possible, give your side, you know, more time to review it. So it's looking likely now. Are we looking at possibly next Tuesday? So rather than have what's potentially a 5-minute bill on the agenda for Thursday, I decided just to cancel the meeting and we'll take up the 5-minute bill at the other time. Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to, from our side, extend a thanks for being considerate on the timing as we start to go through this and review bills that are coming in from one committee, one subcommittee, up to the larger committee as a whole, for an opportunity to review and prepare amendments as and if necessary, and then meet those according to the deadline submission. It certainly is helpful to build in that extra time, especially when it's feasible this early in the session. So I appreciate your willingness to do that.
Yeah, I can't promise there will be that much time as we get later in session, but at least at this point I did want to, I thought that was certainly a reasonable thing to do. So members, thank you for being here today. This committee is